having opened last night at the Opera House, Something Rotten. Oh, I call it the Opera House, shows that I'm an old guy, at the INB Performing Arts Center, as it's now called, and it is the Best of Broadway series, and it runs through Saturday night. Performance is 7:30 each night, plus 2 o'clock matinee on Sunday. And here are a couple of rotten people themselves, especially one when we'll find out about why he's so rotten. And that is Rob McClure in the role of Nick Bottom. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
And let's greet also Maggie Lakas in the role of Bea. Good morning,
Maggie. Good morning.
And we'll find out all that stuff of your relationships here and there and everywhere else. But Rob, you've been involved with this for a while.
Yeah.
Just, you can do it better than I can. What's your elevator speech about what's about? You have about 3 floors of elevator rides,
yes,
to say what Something Rotten is about.
Yeah. Well, we say it takes place in the Renaissance, but we always say that with a sense of tongue-in-cheek because we don't want anyone to think there's going to be a language barrier or these and thous or fluffy language to get past. It has a very contemporary sense of humor. It's about a bunch of writers. I am playing Nick Bottom, one of the writers, and my brother and I are sort of living in the shadows of Shakespeare, who is quite literally, yes, exactly, who is in our show quite literally a rock god. He's sort of a Freddie Mercury, David Bowie rock star of the time, and I hate him quite literally. So I want to outdo him. So I set out to a soothsayer to find out what the future of the theater will be, and he informs me that it's musicals. So my brother and I set out to write the world's first musical.
Yeah,
for better or worse.
For better and worse.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So that's great. So that's an encapsulation of at least what sets up the tension.
Exactly.
And what sets up many of the things we'll talk about. Some of the other tensions. But before we talk about the tensions, the nice thing for you two personally about being on this show, Maggie, Maggie and Rob, tell us what's good about being in this show, Maggie.
Well, I play Bea Bottom, which is Nick's wife.
On stage and off
stage, we are married in real life. So it's a gift to get to not only to work with your partner, because that's not a given in our line of work.
Yeah.
Tends to be that in our line of work, jobs take us away from each other. But that we get to do this together. We get to go across the country and see America and to perform together all over.
Yeah.
It's such a gift. And we've been lucky. This is about our 5th time that we've been able to
In our 12 years together, it's the 5th time. Yeah.
So where most people are saying goodbye to their families for potentially a year, we are, embarking on this journey together.
Yeah,
that
fun.
Completely changes being an on-the-road person.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just totally. I think that the alternative, as you spoke of, would get really difficult.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
And you'd probably see some of your fellow actors who are, calling home every night and Skyping and freaking out.
Yes.
And
living
home on days off.
Yes,
and,
exactly
yeah.
right.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, on the other side, we probably couldn't take a vacation together because it'd be a little difficult. But we get to, this is kind of a working vacation.
Sure. Well, because you get to go places,
Well, talk about what your plans for what you're going to be doing
today,
on Sunday.
Right after this interview,
today.
A bunch of us are going to Green Bluff to go apple picking and have a lovely fall day.
Good.
We're an adventurous bunch. We like to take advantage of the tour, the fact that we're getting to see the country, making people laugh. So as soon as we close, Maggie and I in Spokane on Saturday night, we're going to jump in a car, and our next stop is in Des Moines. So we're going to drive past Devil's Tower. We're big Close Encounters fans, and then hit Mount Rushmore on our way to Des Moines. So we're getting as much of it out of it as we can.
Well, that's, if I may say so, heartwarming. can work. Well, I guess we should talk about the play. The show of Something Rotten.
Absolutely.
It's pretty obvious, the Shakespearean reference, even just in the title.
Yes.
And then it's from there, it's going to go up or downhill, depending on depending on your point of view.
Yeah.
But talk a little bit more about the other things going on, the tensions, the two brothers, the lovers.
Yeah.
Bring up the different interesting
There's definitely
tensions.
A sibling rivalry between my brother and I.
No
I think
kidding.
And Nick is sort of the hot-headed the go-getter of the two of them. And Nigel, his younger brother, is sort of living in the clouds of the sort of romantic language of the period, and he's sort of in love with poetry And Nick, very early on, has one of my favorite lines, which is, "Who talks like this?" Mm-hmm. Which I think a lot of people, when they, you know, the people in the audience who might not be Shakespeare lovers, certainly I know who sympathizes with Nick on those lines because we get big laughs on it. But Nigel is the one who's really the better writer of the two. Mm-hmm. And you come to, you know, there have been theories over the years as to just how much Shakespeare wrote of the Shakespeare canon.
That's the biggest.
Yes, of course. So whether or not Nigel is responsible for some of it is up in the air in our show. But and then, of course, there's the tension between Bea and Nick. I think if you want to talk a little bit about what's going on for Bea.
Well, like in a similar in Shakespeare tropes is the, you know, the orphans and the brothers here in this situation. They lost their family tragically at a young age, and Nick has kind of had to shoulder that burden. And so he has a bit of a chip on his shoulder. I got this. I got this. I can take care of everything. And Bea is a bit of one of the first feminists, we'll say, that she comes at it from the point of view as, I can help you, which I think everybody wants in their relationship. They want to feel like they're a partner and they have some equal footing and equal say. And she's very relatable in that sense, that it's not that she's trying to make a political statement. It's that she just wants to say, hey, you don't have to handle everything. And I know you and I can tell something's up. You just won't talk about it. And so she is constantly trying to convince him to let her help him. And she eventually just gives up on convincing him, just decides to do it anyway because he's not hearing her.
And she also has one of the best songs in the show. It's early on.
It's
called Right Hand Man. And Maggie sings the heck out of it.
Oh, it's a fun role because I basically get this great song right off the bat, and then I get to be silly and fun and play a bunch of characters in disguise. And because since she's a woman,
Both genders. Well, yes. No, mostly men.
Mostly men.
Because that's the only place you could get a job.
Right, exactly. Right. She, you know, being a female in the Renaissance, you know, she didn't have as many options. So she has to be a little sneaky and cunning, and she gets to do some acting herself.
And of course, anyone who knows Shakespeare, the woman dressing up as the man.
Yeah.
And vice versa. Plenty of both in the show.
So much fun. Yeah.
And then the other tension, well, the double tension between Nigel and Portia. Then Portia and her dad.
Yes, exactly.
So
he falls in love. Nigel falls in love with a young Puritan girl, which obviously, being a theater artist in that time, is not the best combination. Or at least her father doesn't think so. And her father has almost every other word out of his mouth is a joke that gets an extended laugh. And that's what we want.
A double entendre.
Yeah, to say the least. Yeah, quadruple entendres. The thing we want people to know most is that if you come to see something rotten, you are going to laugh. That is the sole purpose of the show, is to let people have a safe place where they can go and forget about Facebook, forget about what's going on, and just giggle for 2 hours. And we're having people come to the stage door and tell us, you know, most of the time this would be considered, you know, a bit of a frivolous, fluffy, enjoyable piece of great American original musical comedy. But we're having people at the stage door wait to tell us teary-eyed how much they needed this. And that's really a huge benefit for this for us, is to get to travel the country making people laugh, not just in general, but right now. Because people want to laugh. Mm-hmm. People need to laugh right now. And we're lucky to be able to do it.
Yeah, and we also say that whether you love musicals or hate musicals, and whether you love Shakespeare or hate Shakespeare, you'll love the show because they both celebrate and lovingly poke fun of. So
yes.
It's something that always, if it annoys you that people break out in the song in musicals,
annoys Nick too.
Yeah, exactly. So it kind of throws a wide net like that you'll be able to find something to enjoy in the show.
And getting to the referential nature of the show, part of the fun and the jokes for the audience comes out of, I'm the soothsayer is Nostradamus, not the Nostradamus, but his cousin Thomas Nostradamus. Yes, exactly. And he sees these visions of the future of the theater. We don't know what they mean, but he's trying to interpret them. So if he sees the future and says, I swear the next huge thing has something to do with dancing cats, we have no idea what the heck he's seeing. But of course, the audience knows what he's seeing. And that is such a great time for the audience to be able to play this sort of grab bag game of, can you catch everything Nostradamus is seeing? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, it struck me that if you're to profile an audience into two camps of the music theater lovers and Shakespeare lovers,
yeah.
you already really alluded to this. It's almost a competition. Are there more? Which one has yes. more absurd references?
Yes. Oh yeah. my gosh. Yeah. If you are a Shakespeare connoisseur, you're gonna be. I mean, there's so much for you. But we also, for every person at the stage door who's like, I teach high school English, and this is the greatest gift ever. We also have the husband who was drugged to the theater by his wife, who's not into musicals, who waits at the stage door to say, "This was the best show I've ever seen, and I've never laughed so hard." So the show, we say, it takes care of everybody. There's nobody who's going to feel left out, certainly.
You mentioned high school teachers. Does it sometimes happen that classes arrange to come
oh,
and
yeah.
groups?
Absolutely,
talk about high school kids seeing this show.
We do a lot of talkbacks with school groups, and that's really gratifying because it's, you know, theater is one of those things that I think We love to sort of demystify it for them. A lot of times they come in, how do you do this? How do you get this job? How do you put on a show? And then suddenly they're seeing the stage without any theatrical light on it, and they're seeing, oh, they're just, you know, it's not as glamorous as it looks once they pretty it up. And we love to take any question we can that sort of makes it accessible to them. A lot of times actors or artists, in my experience, like to tell people how hard it is. And how unattainable it is, and that what a rough life you're signing up for.
And that is part of it.
And
that, yeah.
of course, there are sacrifices, but I think they need inspiration.
Yeah,
And I think...
Well, and to see that it's a group of people, because it is a collaborative art,
yeah.
But all coming together to tell a story. And that's where it starts, is a group of people telling a story, and then you have to problem solve in how do we tell this story clearly, how do we,
yeah.
you know, highlight what we want to see, you know... but it's basically a group of people working together, having fun playing make believe.
and we get a lot of, in the talkbacks. We always get a member of the orchestra, our assistant carpenter, stage manager, so that kids who maybe necessarily can't sing or don't like being up in front of people can see a team member who maybe reflects them. And I think the most important thing is what this art form does is put you in someone else's shoes. And if the world doesn't need that right now, my gosh, I don't know what it does.
Sure. We're talking about Something Rotten, which opened last night at the INB and runs through Saturday night every night at 7:30 and then a Saturday matinee at 2 o'clock. One more thing about
yeah.
kind of how to approach this, because we've talked about all of the references to everything.
Yeah.
I know there's a term for it, but it's also the theater, which is about theater, as
yes.
in noises off. Isn't there a term for
yes,
yeah.
sort of self-referential
yeah,
theater?
Yeah, something like that. And
yeah.
so, and even as you were talking about this, there's
yeah.
just, that's that whole issue of how do you be innovative in theater and,
yeah.
and all these things.
Yeah, I mean, this is like the most self-referential thing that can happen because our writers are two brothers. So we have two brothers writing a musical about two brothers writing a musical. and they very much say that they are Nick and Nigel in personality. So it was easy for them to write this. But yeah, I think people like, you know, there is something about the play, about putting on a play, that people are fascinated by that world. They want to see how art is created. You know, there's a reason why, you know, Sunday in the Park with George is one of the most sort of revered musicals, because people like to see the process of making art. And this is a great original American musical about how to make a musical. And how sort of absurd it can be at times, the finding the right moments for characters to randomly break into song without it feeling ridiculous.
Well, and how it celebrates it and makes fun of some of the costumes in the show are gorgeous,
yes.
absolutely gorgeous. But then at times they're ridiculous.
Yeah. Yes, maybe we just won't even give away.
Yeah,
yes.
we don't want to give away, because I feel like there are people who are sitting
the
down
largest absurdity.
Who have no idea what they have in store. But
yeah,
when
let's just say Nostradamus massively misinterprets a vision of Hamlet. And we'll leave it at that.
but when it is something to be celebrated, they have something really to feast their eyes on, because it's so beautiful. And then when they want to make fun of it, it's ridiculous. And that's also what's fun about doing a new musical. There's so many adaptations, there's so many revivals, but this is a new story. And that's kind of rare. So people at the stage are like, I had no idea what this was coming into it. And they don't even sometimes don't get the Something Rotten reference to being online. from Hamlet. So they really don't know what they have in store for them. And that's so fun for us. You know, when we're backstage before the curtain comes up, we know that there's an audience full of people that have no idea what's about.
We've got a basket full of surprises that just keep them laughing all night. It's really so thrilling.
Yeah, Something Rotten, which is through Saturday, Rob McClure as Nick Bottom and Maggie Lakas as B. Now, I want to take a different tack than I usually do on your own careers and your own autobiographies. In that sense, we've talked about this range of theater. I want you to each talk about yourselves relative to the range of your theatrical experience. Mm. Rather than just the background or the training.
Yeah, sure. I tend to, I think I'm sort of known most for my sort of physical comedy work. I got a Tony nomination for playing Charlie Chaplin, and that was sort of a one of those life-changing moments. speaking of range, whenever I'm on television, for whatever reason, I've been cast as like serial killers. So it's like in the world of theater, I'm sort of the young comic protagonist, and for some reason television thinks I'm a serial killer.
Well, I think it's the mislead.
Yes, of course.
Looks like the nice, funny guy.
That guy would be the bad guy. Yeah.
So if you see him on TV, he did it.
I did it.
He
usually,
did it.
It usually tends to be the case. That's the great thing about what we do is that you get to, you know, we were just in Seattle, and we went to Boeing to see how the planes were built. And you look at these people, these scientists and these, you know, these incredible engineers, and you go, God, I could never go to school long enough to be able to do that. But I'd love to do enough research to be able to pretend to be able to do that. Yeah. I'd love to play that guy. You know, we went to NASA in Houston, and you go, I don't want to put in the training to become an astronaut, but boy, do I want to play one. And that's what's so fun about what we do is every couple of months or years, you get to pretend to be an expert on something different. And it does require you to dive into that world and learn as much as you can about it. So,
of course. And you, Maggie, what are some of your things?
It's interesting. My career has taken a funny path. Because this is radio, I'll say I'm short. I'm 5'2". And till I was 28 years old, I played a child. Because it's always easier to have an adult play a child because you don't have to get around laws and schools and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then it became difficult because I still looked young until you put me next to someone who actually was young. So then I entered I played children and animals. Then I played like animals or I did a lot of specialty type work because I could
puppeteer and
a musician. I could play music. So then I did more like experimental based theater. And then it's kind of now settled in where I can play an adult now. And it's been really nice. That's the funny path that this line of work takes us on that, you know, you have a bunch of skills and sometimes you thought, well, I didn't know that, you know, playing the clarinet would get me a job, but then it gets you a job and you get to work with a bunch of people and then being a puppeteer gets you a job. And now I guess get to be a human female, who can just be in a show and sing and act, and it's a wonderful adventure every day.
Both of us have been doing this for about 15 years, and the special skills section of your resume continues to grow. You know, you've got lasso and rope tricks from a show you did 13 years ago that if somebody pulls out a length of rope, you can spin it on the tour bus to show people how to do it, and then puppetry, and you just never know. You never know what the next thing you're going to be asked to do is, and that's the best part about this.
Nice. Maggie Lakas as B and Rob McClure as Nick Bottom. As we go out, I have this little song, Tell Me About Where Renaissance Gems Comes From, because I think it relates not only in a way to this show, but to Rent, which is coming along.
So we've got, in trying to cast Shakespeare for this tour, we did it on Broadway before we headed out on the road, but they were looking for a musical theater rock god, and there is only one, and it's Adam Pascal of Rent fame. Mm-hmm. He originated the role of Roger in Rent, got a Tony nomination for it, of course is known for Aida and Cabaret and a bunch of other amazing things, and he is about as much of a rock star as Broadway can hope for, so they had an idea to have him sing some songs from Rent but with a Renaissance accompaniment. So we jokingly did this little YouTube series called Welcome to the Rentaissance. And of course, it's a good excuse to have Adam sing anything because he's got such an extraordinary instrument. I'm lucky to play opposite him every night.
That's great. So even as we go out, we'll go to that. Thank you very much for getting up early and coming to do this.
Our pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
And once again, Maggie Lakas as B and Rob McClure as Nick Bottom. From Something Rotten, which is every night at 7:30 and then Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock at the INB, and that is through Saturday. Here's that that little tune, Renaissance Jams.
The filmmaker cannot see, and the songwriter cannot hear. Twilight Zone. And when you're living in the Renaissance, at the end of the millennium, you're what you are.